Elizabeth Este is the congresswoman from Connecticut's 5th District. Elizabeth, we were talking the other day about gun control, and I noticed that Judge Gorsuch, his opinions have backed the Second Amendment, so-called. And at the time, you told me there were some things that were happening that we all ought to know about, so maybe you could tell us.
Absolutely. Just last week, the House Veterans Committee, which I've just joined, 2 weeks ago, I should say, 2 weeks ago, the House Veterans Committee decided to push through very quickly, without any hearing, a bill that is entitled the, Veterans Second Amendment Bill. Now, this bill is designed to, it's a big gift to the gun lobby. For 20 years now, the Veterans Administration has been trying to help veterans in crisis, to get them the help and care they need. But also, as part of that, they have reported the names of veterans who get fiduciaries appointed, people to help them manage their affairs. And you have to petition to get someone to help manage your affairs and your veterans' benefits. And those names are then submitted to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, what's called the NICS system. And this is done to help ensure that veterans in crisis don't have easy access to guns. We know from people who work on military suicide prevention, and there are 20, and this is an underestimate by all accounts, at least 20 military and veteran suicides a day. Just think about that, a day. It is a very large percentage of the gun deaths in America are from veterans and military. And so there's been an effort now for 20 years to try to help keep guns out of the hands of veterans in crisis. The bill that got pushed through committee and jammed through the House last week would say, forward going, the VA is not going to report any of those names. And this notion is somehow Second Amendment rights are more important than life and liberty. It's a crazy idea. We've been trying to work across the aisle to get this fixed, but sadly the GOP decided to just side with the gun lobby and say, okay, you may have a diagnosis of schizophrenia. People may be really worried about your mental well-being and want to make sure you don't have easy access to guns. You might hurt yourself. You might hurt somebody else. And none of those names gets reported now. Well, if this gets passed in the Senate, it will get signed by the president. So we're working hard to make sure the Senate doesn't take it up. Terrible bill.
Any hints in the Senate?
So far we're going to keep working our allies in the Senate to say, listen, if there are problems with this list, if the list is too big, and it may be that there are some people who need help with financial affairs, should still have chance to own guns. That may well be that. Then we should work on that. We should work on that together. That's what Congress is supposed to do. Work across the aisle to solve problems. You don't get rid of this reporting across the board, even when people might harm themselves. It's a huge priority to deal with military suicides, and we need to do better. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but I'm going to keep working. The other two bills, one is about silencers, which is just flat out crazy, called hearing protection. We're in the 1984 world of calling something something else, so rather than silencers, what you see in those Bond movies, to deregulate them. I mean that anybody could buy them, and that you wouldn't have to go through more extensive checking that we've been doing now for decades. We've been doing extensive checking since 1934, 1935. We've had tight regulations on silencers for obvious reasons. It's dangerous for law enforcement. It's hard to know where crimes are being committed. And there's really no good reason for a lot of people to have them. And police want to know who has them. Make sure it's not the bad guys. Well, this would deregulate it, open it up to the gun show loophole for silencers, too. It's a terrible idea. So we've got some bad bills coming down the pike, and concealed carry, which would basically gut individual states, higher standards, and the lowest state of any state would control for the country. Another terrible idea. So we've got a battle on our hands, and elections have consequences, as I'm sure all your listeners know.
Elizabeth Esty, we're going to be talking for a minute or two, if it's all right with you, about opioids.
Sure.
I know you've been very, very concerned about that. And an awful lot of people have died as a result of these drugs. And it also becomes a gateway to heroin. We know that. Is anything changing, or are we still back to square one?
Well, I had a conversation with the new Secretary of Veterans Affairs last week to impress upon him how important an issue that was in the veterans community and how we need to make sure that we're doing good prescribing practices and helping people to deal with chronic pain, but also to deal with PTSD and not be using opioids for that. And unfortunately, in some cases, that has been used and has hooked our veterans, which is not good. But here's one of the deals about, frankly, the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act has provided that, coupled with other legislation in the last few years, has really helped elevate the status of mental health and substance abuse treatment and addiction treatment. And that's all at jeopardy now. That's at jeopardy. You know, if we're going to be doing big tax cuts for the rich and then gutting the funding for the Affordable Care Act, it's hard to imagine you're going to see health plans that have the kind of coverage that the Affordable Care Act really made sure that there was parity for mental health, and that includes substance abuse treatment. So some of the very same people who supported President Trump, who were struggling with opioid addiction, are going to be the people who are hurt most by this ill-conceived, hastily put together Affordable Care Act repeal and not even replace.
Is there anything that you think in the Democratic minority you can do to make sure that we pay more attention to this?
Well, I'm going to continue my work on the bipartisan task force in the House on the opioid crisis. And, you know, for better and really for worse, Alan, this is a crisis and an epidemic that affects all parts of the country. It hits very hard, as you know, in Connecticut, upstate mm-hmm. New York, in parts of New England. Connecticut has the third highest overdose rate in the country. And
wow.
So, for better and worse, people who voted for the new president, a lot of them live in parts of the country which are hit hard by this. So I'm going to keep making that appeal to the president, to my Republican colleagues, that this is a problem that the president needs to help address. He needs to be a partner with us. And I will say, you know, tiny little glimmers of hope. Two of the bills that I worked on in the last Congress, which never quite made it through, were passed by the Senate, by the House, and signed by the president a couple of weeks ago. And so of the first 8 bills signed by the president, only 2 were bipartisan and both were mine. So, you know, that gives me a tiny glimmer of hope that there may be areas we can work together. And I'm going to stand up strongly against the stuff I think is bad and wrong. But there are a lot of problems the country is wrestling with, and the American people want us to get addressed. And if I can get good legislation and bipartisan support and the president's willing to sign it, that would be better for the American people.
Okay, I got 1 minute left. I want to ask you, the president
sure.
in his campaign talked about, you know, infrastructure repair. And a lot of Democrats said, now that's one we can work with you on. Any hope?
Well, I hope so. I'm now the vice-ranking member of the Transportation Committee, so I'm very eager to get this done. It's important for our region, very important. However, I will note 2 weeks ago, the American Society of Civil Engineers gave America a D+ for infrastructure. We have a lot of work to do, and we are waiting for the president to come forward with a proposal. Not much of anything yet, and it sounds like it's being pushed off to the summer or the fall. But this is the president's obligation now to come forward with a detailed plan. It needs real investment. It can't just be tax credits and giveaways to developers. It needs to be public sector investment in building the infrastructure of the future. And that's what we're counting on him. We're going to hold him accountable on that. And keep pushing with my Republican colleagues who want to spend money on this, too. So we'll keep at it.
Raising the question of where will the money come from if it's going to the wall and the armed forces?
Well, that's the problem. And so just a preview of that is the president's skinny budget that was just released as a so-called, the not very detailed budget, was detailed enough to cut 31% out of EPA, which includes entirely cutting the brownfields program. Now, that's really important for listeners in our area because we have these older industrial sites that need to be cleaned up, and EPA has been an absolutely vital partner in doing that. And President Trump is not showing an understanding of what the country needs by cutting that program. For every dollar invested, you leverage $18 of private sector investment, putting people back to work, putting properties back on the tax rolls, and cleaning up sites for communities. It's a win for everybody. It's a lot of Republican support, and I'm about to introduce bipartisan legislation to reauthorize brownfields and to put the funding back where it should be at $250 million.
Congresswoman Elizabeth Esty of Northwest Connecticut's 5th District. She's been in office since 2013, and we love the fact that she keeps coming back and talking to us. Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Alan. Take care, and we'll be back with you soon.